Greetings, friends, and journey along with me now back in time to the days when radio was king of the entertainment castle. I'm your host, Corey Walker. Let's gather once more around the old part of the radio and enjoy another hour of thrilling entertainment. I decided that today I would feature a sci-fi episode and a thriller episode. So first up is The Mysterious Traveler, which I'm featuring for the first time. The Mysterious Traveler features strange and terrifying tales. The series ran on Mutual from December 5th, 1943, to September 16th, 1952, and was programmed in many time slots over the years. Maurice Tarplin played the title role, a narrator who arrived by a phantom train at night and who told his story from, quote, some omniscient perch inside the soul of his protagonist. Today's episode is titled Out of the Past and was first heard on Sunday, April 2nd, 1944 on the Mutual Network. Let's board the train with the Mysterious Traveler.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. And starring tonight, two of radio's foremost personalities, Santos Ortega and Ann Shepherd, in Out of the Past.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as you hear Out of the Past. Your name is Joan Morgan, and as you stand looking over Central Park from your penthouse terrace on this beautiful spring day, you can't help but feel you're the luckiest woman living. You're young, attractive, fairly wealthy, and happily married to a Broadway actor. Yes, Joan, there's little more you could ask for. The doorbell rings. You run to the door to greet your husband, Keith, who's home from his matinee performance.
Hello, beautiful. How's my one and only?
Hello, darling. Oh, Keith, no wonder every actress wants to have you for her leading man.
Nonsense. I'll have you know the only person I kiss like that is my wife.
Better say that. How is the matinee today?
Fine. I got 7 curtain calls. Oh, here's the afternoon mail. I picked it up at the desk.
Hmm. Anything for me?
I haven't looked it over, dear.
Oh, yes, here's one for me. 3 others for you, dear.
Let's see. This one's a bill from the hotel management. Darling, we're living beyond our means.
Oh, Keith, you're not going to start that again, are you? Well, we have over $500,000.
I've told you 12 times I won't touch that money. It's yours, not mine.
Darling, it isn't a question of it being yours or mine. It's ours.
Joan, I made it clear to you when we got married that we'd have to live on the money I earn.
Then what'll I do with my money if you won't allow me to spend it?
Well, someday we'll have 6 children. You can save it for that.
All right, darling. I wonder who my letter can be from.
You rip open the envelope, Joan, as Keith looks at the rest of his mail. For a moment you feel as if your heart has stopped, then it begins to beat wildly. Over and over you read the 2 sentences. A friend from Europe expects you tomorrow afternoon at 2:00 at the Hotel Edgewood. Please bring $25,000 in cash, or else I shall be forced to take action. John Benedict.
Joan, what is it? What's wrong, darling?
What did you say?
You look so upset. Is it that letter you're reading?
Letter? No. No.
Well, then, if it isn't the letter, what is it?
It's nothing, darling. Nothing at all. It's just that I have a headache.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I get you something?
No, Keith. No. I'll be all right. All I need is a little rest.
Come in, won't you, Joan? Sorry to have kept you waiting.
Martin, you must help me.
Why, of course, Joan. You know I'd do anything for you. Sit down and tell me about it.
Martin, I'm in trouble. I'm in great trouble.
Joan, what is it? What's wrong?
I'm being blackmailed.
Blackmailed?
Yes.
By whom?
A man named John Benedict. I don't know who he is. But I received a letter from him yesterday afternoon.
There's only one thing to do, and that's to go to the police. I'll call the district
attorney. No. I can't go to the police.
Why not?
This man, Benedict, knows something I can't afford to have exposed.
What does he know, Joe?
Please, don't ask me. I know that you were my father's best friend, but I can't tell you. Believe me, if it ever gets out, it would ruin my marriage. My life. I couldn't stand to lose Keith. I couldn't. I'd rather die.
All right, Joan. I think you're making a mistake, but I'll help you. How much money does this man Benedict want?
A half hour later, you enter a dingy hotel and go to room 14. As Martin opens the door, he reveals a squalid, dimly lit room. For the first time, Joan, you see John Benedict. He's a tall, heavy man with coarse features and a thick black beard. In the half light, he appears to be about 50. His clothes are of fine English cut, but time and wear have taken their toll. He stares at you for a moment, Joan, then speaks.
How do you do, Mrs. Morgan? Won't you please come in?
Thank you. This is Mr. Walker, friend.
Yes, of course. I trust you will forgive me these dismal surroundings, but alas, I am quite penniless.
So you thought it would be an excellent idea to blackmail this lady for funds?
I am afraid you misunderstand me, Mr. Walker. I am not forcing this beautiful lady to give me £5,000. Rather, I am, shall we say, requesting a loan.
Yes, but if she doesn't give you this loan, you'll ruin her marriage or her life.
It would distress me to ruin anyone's life. But then it also distresses me to live in a pigsty like this.
A much more suitable place would be the state penitentiary.
Martin, please don't talk like that.
Evidently, Mrs. Morgan, your friend is more interested in having me placed in prison than in saving you from disaster. I'm afraid you have not revealed our little secret to Mr. Walker.
No. No, I haven't.
Well, then, perhaps if we were to tell him, he would not be quite so eager to imprison me. Perhaps if he knew that at one time you had...
No. Don't say any more. I'll pay you.
Allow me to commend you on your good judgment.
Martin, give him the money. Give it to him.
Very well. Here's your filthy blood money.
Thank you. I think you have been very wise, Mrs. Morgan. Very wise indeed. Good day.
In the weeks that follow, Joan, you try to forget Mr. Benedict and the terrifying secret he shares with you. But you aren't successful, are you? Everywhere you go, you unconsciously find yourself fearfully looking for him. Life has become tense, frightening. Then one afternoon, while Keith is at rehearsal of a new play, you receive a phone call. A call that sends you in a panic to Martin Walker's office.
Martin, I've heard from him again.
Benedict?
Yes, he phoned an hour ago. He wants $50,000.
$50,000? Maybe now you'll have sense enough to let me turn this over to the police.
No, I can't do that.
You mean you're going to buy him off a second time?
Yes, I must.
But you can't. What's to prevent his extorting money from you a third or a fourth time? He'll squeeze you dry.
The money doesn't matter, do you hear? Nothing matters but keeping what Benedict knows from Keith. If Keith finds out, it'll mean the end of everything for me. Everything.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Morgan. Oh, I see you brought Mr. Walker. And I was counting on a pleasant afternoon. May I take your coat?
No.
Benedict, what do you mean by asking for $50,000? We paid you $25,000. That was supposed to keep your mouth shut.
Well, it has, up to now. But as you can see by this suite of rooms, Mr. Walker, it takes money to live lavishly. Therefore, I shall need more.
Well, you shan't have it. We paid you off once. We're not paying you off again. There's a limit to what anyone will pay.
Yes, quite true, Mr. Walker. But the limit has not been reached. As yet.
You swine. If I had my way, I'd call the police and put you where you belong.
Mrs. Morgan, I'm afraid you are allowing your friend to go too far. I have but to pick up this telephone, and your world will come crashing down about.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't. Martin, give him the money.
But, Joan,
give it to him. I can't stand this any longer.
Very well. Here it is, Benedict. But I warn you, you'd better not try anything further. There is such a thing as pushing a person too far.
I shall try to remember that, Mr. Walker. Thank you for your advice and the money.
You're trembling with fear as you leave Benedict's luxurious suite, aren't you, Jordan? And even when you reach your own apartment, the fear hasn't left you. Weeks pass, and life is a nightmare. Every time someone knocks at the door or the phone rings, your heart begins to beat wildly. And worst of all, Keith senses something is wrong.
I'll answer it.
But I'm much closer to it there.
Hello?
This is Mr. Morgan's apartment.
Yes?
This is the stage manager at the theater. Will you please remind Mr. Morgan of the special matinee we're giving today?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'll tell him. It was the theater calling, Keith, to remind you of today's special performance.
I haven't forgotten. It's only 5 of 2. I still have a few minutes before I have to leave. Joan.
Yes?
What is it, darling? What's come over you?
Come over me?
Yes. These past weeks, you've been just a bundle of nerves. Every time the phone rings or the mail arrives, you begin to tremble. What's wrong?
Darling, you're just imagining all that.
Joan, stop acting as though I were a child. I can see something's wrong, and I want to know what it is.
Keith, please. There's nothing... Who could that be?
Never mind, I'll get it.
No,
you just sit where you are and rest.
Look, darling, you have to get to the... What's taking him so long? Why doesn't he come back? Keith? Who is it? Keith!
Joan, what is it? Why did you scream like that?
I didn't scream. Who was that at the door?
Well, it was just a special delivery boy. He brought this special delivery for you.
Special delivery?
Yes, here.
Thank you.
Aren't you going to open it? After all, it is a special delivery.
Yes. Of course.
I never saw anyone so afraid of a letter. Who's it from? Joan, what's wrong?
Nothing. Nothing.
Don't tell me that. You look as though you were going to collapse. Now, give me that letter.
No,
I said,
please.
Give it to me.
No, please.
Yeah, that's better. Perhaps this letter will tell me what's wrong. Well, it's only one sentence. I will phone you at 2. There isn't even a signature. Who wrote this note, Joan?
I don't know.
You must know, else why would you have grown so pale? I'll phone you at 2. It's almost 2 now. I'll wait for that call.
Keith, please. You must have faith in me.
All these weeks I've had faith, said nothing, hoping you'd tell me what was wrong. Now I must find out for myself. Well, right on time.
Keith,
just 2 o'clock.
Please, don't answer.
Take your phone. Take your hand off the phone,
please,
Joan.
Keith, no.
I said take your hand off the phone.
Don't.
Hello? 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 No answer. Another call hung up when they heard my voice. I suppose you won't tell me who it is? All right, then. I have to leave for the matinee now. I won't be home for dinner, but when I return after tonight's performance, we'll have this out once and for all.
Please. Please. I just can't tell you. If you'd only...
Goodbye,
wait.
Joan.
Keith. I can't. Oh, darling. If only I could tell you. If only... But I know you wouldn't want me then. How could you? How could you if you... Hello?
Good afternoon, Mrs. Morgan.
You promised you'd leave me alone, that I'd never hear from you again. That was only a month ago.
Yes, I know. But then, I am always making promises I cannot keep.
You've ruined everything, everything. My husband read the special delivery letter you sent. He answered the phone when you called a few minutes ago. How can I explain?
Oh, that should not be too difficult for a clever woman like yourself. And you are a clever woman, are you not?
What do you want? I'm tired of your playing cat and mouse with me.
I intend to call on you at 5:30 this afternoon.
I won't pay you another cent, do you hear? There's no end to your demands.
You may expect me at 5:30.
No.
And do not have Walker there.
No, I won't see you. I won't... Hello? 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 I won't see you!
Good afternoon, Mrs. Morgan. As you can see, I am right on time. It's exactly 5:30. This is a lovely penthouse you have. It's good to see you without Walker around.
How can you do this to me? I've never harmed you. Why do you insist on ruining my life? Why?
My dear lady, the last thing I desire to do is to ruin your life. Unfortunately, the world you and I live in being what it is, I am forced by circumstances to live by my wits.
If I give you the money now, how do I know you won't be back in another month?
Oh, that is very simple. Because after you pay me off this time, there would not be any point in my bothering you again.
What do you mean?
I mean, Mrs. Morgan, that this time I want $500,000.
$500,000?
Yes. If I am not mistaken, that is what the balance of your fortune amounts to. Do you not see? Once you have paid it over to me, there would be no point in my bothering you anymore. Simple. Is it not?
You must be mad.
I? Oh, no, Mrs. Morgan, not I. Come now, you love your husband and he loves you. There are years and years of happiness before you. If he does not learn your little secret. You are wise. You will turn the money over to me.
I can't. If I were to withdraw $500,000, he'd find out about it.
But there is always the chance that he won't. You do not do as I ask. I shall be forced to reveal the secret.
No, no.
Yes, Mrs. Morgan. Your husband will learn that while you were in England in 1939, you murdered your sweetheart.
I won't listen.
But your husband will. And he will learn that after you committed this murder, you spent the following 8 years in an English insane asylum.
No, you can't tell him. You can't.
Think of what a sensation the tabloids will make out of it. And think of what people will say.
No.
Your husband would have to divorce
you. No.
So, fainted, have you? That is not going to help you. Mrs. Morgan.
Martin, I just got your message at the theater. Where's Joan? What's wrong?
She's in her bedroom with Dr. Richards. It seems that she... Here's Dr. Richards now.
Doctor, what's wrong?
Keith, you must prepare yourself for a shock.
What's happened?
Half hour ago, one of your neighbors on the floor heard Joan weeping and screaming hysterically. The manager knew I was your doctor and sent for me.
But why was she weeping and screaming?
She's had a breakdown.
Breakdown?
Yes.
Well, I want to see her. I must.
Very well, Keith, but only for a moment. Mr. Walker, I'm afraid you'll have to wait here.
I understand, Doc.
Keith, you must keep a grip on yourself.
All right.
Joan. Darling. It's Keith.
Please, stay away from me. Stay away, both of you. No, don't come near me.
Doctor, she doesn't even recognize me.
Yes, Keith, I know.
I know who you are. You can't fool me. One of you is Mr. Benedict. Maybe both of you are Mr. Benedict. Yes. I know what you're here for, but I won't let you. I won't let you.
She's completely out of her mind.
I know you're both Mr. Benedict. You can't fool me.
Who is this Benedict she keeps talking about?
I don't know, Keith. She feels she's being persecuted by this Benedict fellow. He may be real, and again, he may be a figment of her imagination.
She's deathly afraid of him.
Yes, she sees everyone as this fellow Benedict. I tried to give her a sedative, but she grows violent when I approach.
Well, can't you do something for her?
I've already sent for an ambulance. She'd be much better off in a hospital where she can have constant medical care. Come along, Keith.
How is she, Doctor?
Well, it may be a long time before she recovers. I'm going down to the lobby, wait for the ambulance. I suggest you two stay here. Keep an eye on her. I've left the door to her room open.
All right, Doctor.
Shouldn't be more than a few minutes.
How do you feel, Keith?
Tired, if you want to know.
Well, it's only natural. These past 2 months have been quite strenuous for you. But with $500,000 and a wife who'll probably never be in any condition to ask you about it, you've done quite well.
Quite well? That's an understatement. Name one actor, living or dead, who could have given as great a performance as Mr. Benedict as I did.
You were superb as Benedict, I admit.
Superb? Why, I was magnificent. The costume, the makeup, my accent, simply perfect. I tell you, it was the greatest performance ever given. What a pity you weren't here at 5:30 this afternoon.
I'm sure I missed the performance of the age.
I outdid myself. You should have heard me.
Yes, Mrs. Morgan. Your husband will learn that while you were in England in 1939, you murdered your... sweetheart. That after you committed this murder, you spent the following 8 years in an English insane asylum.
Ah, it's really a pity I've played my greatest role to an audience of one.
Well, yes, Keith, but you're probably the highest paid actor in the world. I'm sure that $500,000 for 2 months' work, less my share, of course, is something of a record.
Yes, it probably is.
I heard you, Mr. Benedict.
But,
you can't fool me.
Joan!
I know one of you is Mr. Benedict. Or are you both Mr. Yes, you both must be Mr. Benedict. That's clever. That disguise you use, that's clever. But you can't fool me!
She must have overheard you. That brought her out of the room. Yes,
no matter how many disguises you use, I know you. No, don't you come near me. Don't come near me.
Keith, she's got
don't
a gun.
Come
Joan,
near me.
Put that gun down.
I'm not going to let you tell. I'm not going to let
no,
you tell.
No, don't. Don't, Joan. Shut up. You shut me. Oh, Joan, no. I'm not Mr. Benedict. He's...
You'll never tell Keith now. Never, never, never.
Mysterious traveler again. Did you enjoy our trip? Too bad about poor Keith and Martin. Such interesting scoundrels. That fellow Keith was certainly a remarkable actor, wasn't he? But, like so many actors, he overplayed his role. With fatal results. What happened to Joan Morgan? Well, the poor woman was committed to an institution where, after several years of treatment, she recovered completely. However, she still has a deathly fear of actors. Oh, you'll have to get off here. I'm sorry. left, I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at the same time.
You've just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. The role of the Mysterious Traveler is played by Maurice Tarplin. Others in the cast were Santos Ortega, Ann Shepherd, and Roger DeCoven. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
What a great ending. That was truly a great episode, complete with some great storytelling. You are listening to the Mysterious Traveler episode Out of the Past, which was first heard on Sunday, April 2nd, 1944 on the Mutual Network. I hope you enjoyed that great series. Next, we're going to hear an episode of Suspense, one of the longest running American old-time radio series. It had an original broadcast run of 22 years, running from July 22, 1940 until September 30, 1962, all on CBS. When the last episode of Suspense aired, it closed out the golden age of radio. The episode I'm featuring today was from the early years of Suspense and starred Jimmy Stewart as the main guest star. I selected it because CFAS volunteer Maurice is a big fan of Stewart's acting and I like to please my listeners. Today's episode is titled Consequence and was first heard on Thursday, February 21st, 1946 at 8 p.m. Let the thrills begin.
Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines present Suspense.
Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. James Stewart as star of Consequence. A suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glass full would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you James Stewart in a remarkable tale of
suspense. Maybe the costume was the decisive factor, or maybe it would have happened anyway. In any event, the occasion was the 10th reunion, and the class of 29, as such occasions demand, were all dressed identically in cowboy suits. And there was Ted Wolfe, whom I hadn't seen in 10 years, although in college he'd been by far my closest friend. And so, of course, I brought him home to dinner. And Gwen managed to be quite charming, even though it was the maid's night out. She didn't even kick about the oven. And that's how it started out, just like that. Just like any pleasant, casual little evening.
Oh, Gwen, it was a wonderful meal. Last one I'll get like that for a while.
Thank you, sir.
Well, have you really got to go tonight, Ted? Can't you take another day or so?
Not very well. Got my plane reservations and everything. Anyway, I told him I'd be back this week, and tonight's just about the deadline if I'm going to make it.
Well, what time's your plane?
3 a.m.
Oh,
say, that reminds me. I can't go aboard in this thing.
Well, you probably will. I think you're both kind of stuck on yourselves in those cowboy outfits. Worse than a couple of kids.
Sure, I'm going to wear them to the hospital tomorrow.
No kidding, old. People will think I'm nuts.
All right, spoil sport. I'll call the hotel later. They'll bring your bags over. You can change here. Although, I should think a cowboy suit would be a sensation in Ecuador.
Are you really going to Ecuador, Ted? At first, I thought it must be a joke.
No, well, you heard me talk about the work Ted's doing down there.
No, but Ecuador.
Well, they got to have medical care out on those plantations some way. And I like it.
I don't see how you stand it. Living like a hermit, cut off from civilization and not making... Well, I mean, they can't pay you.
No, Gwen.
What time is it? Oh, goodness, I've got to run.
Boy, are you leaving us, Gwen?
Yes, I promised Mother I'd come out to the country tonight. Anyway, I know you two would much rather talk over old times by yourselves.
I'm sorry. Well, in case I don't see you again, thanks for everything. It's been swell.
Well, you're coming back sometime, aren't you?
Maybe 5 years, maybe 10, maybe never.
Oh, silly. You come back next year and kind of stay for a while. I am sorry I have to go, but you two have a nice evening. Are there eggs in the icebox, Phil? Did he always have to have fried eggs at night when he was in college, Ted?
That's Phil, all right.
Well, goodbye, darling. Now, don't even get up to come to the door. Now, I'll phone you tomorrow night.
Goodbye, Gwen.
Have a good trip, Ted. Bye.
Bye. Oh, you're a lucky man, Phil.
Am I?
I suppose you know that the main reason I came to this shindig at all was to see you.
Why me? It's been a long time since you and I had the same dreams, Ted.
You haven't lost them, though. You're still in there pitching.
Oh, yes, yes. Private practice. Two cars in the garage, two chickens in the pot. That's the kind of ball I've been pitching the past 10 years, and it's the kind I'll keep on pitching until some other doc says coronary thrombosis and they carry me out.
You can't kid me, Phil. You're happy. And I'd just about given up the idea that there was such a thing as a happy man.
And now you think you've found one.
I know I have. I knew it the minute I came into this room. I knew it the minute I saw her.
Gwen?
Yes, Gwen.
I hate Gwen.
You what?
And what's more, she hates me. Oh, it's nothing that shows on the surface. We get along because we have to. Because my reputation would suffer if we didn't.
Phil, you can't be serious.
No? Why do you think I've given up every dream I've ever had? Why do you think I spend my life treating the imaginary ills of a lot of wealthy hypochondriacs? So Gwen can have this and Gwen can do that. So Gwen can satisfy every greedy instinct and every petty, rotten ambition any woman ever had.
Good Lord. I never realized. Well, you've got to do something about it, Phil. You've got to get out. Go to another city. Go to another country.
Yeah, she'd be after me like a hawk. She'd have me up before the medical association. Oh, there are 1,001 things she'd do and would do. I've thought every way there is. There's no use. Well, now I've got that off my chest. Now you know. I'm sorry I was a fool. Dr. Martin. Oh? Yes, well, now? Oh, right. I'll be right down.
Hey, you're not going out now. I want to talk to you.
No, I'm still a doctor. Even Gwen can't stop that. I'll be back before you leave, though. If you want to stick around, I'd sort of like to ride out the airport with you.
Is it really important, Phil?
Yeah. Now, just make yourself at home. You can fix anything you want out in the kitchen, but look out for that oven, though. It leaks when you turn it off wrong. I won't be long.
Okay. I'll wait. Doctor.
Thanks, Doctor. Kind of hoped you would, Ted. That was the second thing. Ted's deciding to stay, but I didn't know it then. All I knew was that Joe had called from the office and she was upset. Still, I decided to walk. I was upset, too. When I got there, she was going over the accounts. Hello, darling.
Hello. That was nice.
Well, isn't it always?
Always. Terribly.
Well, what are you doing? There isn't all that rush to get the bills out.
There is, though. For me?
For you?
Huh?
Well, what is it, Joe? What's the matter?
Phil, I had a talk with Father this evening.
What, something about us?
All about us.
Well, he doesn't know anything. He couldn't. Nobody does unless you told him.
You know I wouldn't do that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, darling. I know.
Anyway, it isn't what he knows. It's what he thinks. We had an awful row. He said he'd go to the trustees of the hospital. He said he'd go to Gwen.
He said that?
That's why I'm getting the bills out for you now, because I'm going away.
Well, where? How long?
No, darling, it's not going to be like that. It's for good.
Well, Joe...
It's for good, Phil.
Joe, I can't let you go. I know it hasn't been perfect. I know it's been infinitely worse for you than for me, but at least we've had something. At least I've always known you were here on the other side of the door, and I could see you and talk to you.
I can't live with a door between us anymore.
Well, maybe you just don't love me enough to... No, darling, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that.
Phil, I'm not playing noble, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot because it isn't as though there was some decision you could make. There isn't. This had to happen someday, and it has, that's all.
I could go with you.
You couldn't do that, Phil.
Well, why not? I could change my name. I could go to another city, even another country. I could get back into research.
Oh, darling. It's no go, Phil.
Oh, I know. I asked her for a divorce again this morning.
don't have to tell me the answer. Is no answer for us, Phil. Not one that we can take. There we are.
Yeah. Yeah, there we are.
Well, you better go now. I've got all this to do.
Well, let me help you.
No.
Well, why not?
I could weaken. And then where would we be?
Oh, Joe,
oh,
please.
Oh, no, Phil, please go. Please, please, please.
All right, I'll go. I don't know how long I walked that night or where. Perhaps most men are weak and never know it. But when you're losing the woman you think you love, that's when you'll find it out. That's when you'll see yourself at last in the pitiless glare of all your poor, frightened, childish helplessness. And so I walked, and I was sick to the depths of my soul. And I walked some more. And somewhere in the distance I heard a siren. There was a glow against the sky, fire. And then I realized I was near my home. And then it wasn't just a glow against the sky of any fire. It was my own house. Burned almost to the ground.
How did you do it? I don't know. Somebody said they think it was the gas.
Stunned and confused, I began edging through the crowd. And then there was a stillness. And a few men took off their hats. And I saw it. The stretcher. And the blanket thrown over the shapeless form. And the blackened, shriveled cowboy boot. And I remembered. Ted. Ted had been in the house.
Just got him out now.
Yeah, what's left of him? You wouldn't hardly know it was a man.
Poor.
Frantically, I started forward, and then I stopped because I thought somebody had spoken to me.
Come on, Philip, come on. I know it's Philip. He took care of me.
They weren't looking at me. They were looking on the ground and the stretcher and that thing that lay there on it.
Dr. Philip Martin.
Yeah, I knew him. Oh, he was a good doctor, a good
doctor. Oh, Dr. Martin. Oh, what an awful way to die.
Suddenly, I was shaking with excitement. I pulled my hat over my eyes. I turned up my collar. I edged back through the crowd, out into the street, and I turned the corner. And then I ran. Joe, I'm going with you.
Phil, what did you do? You haven't...
No, Joe. It's all right. I'll tell you about it later. We're free. Joe, we're free. I'm dead. I mean, Dr. Philip Martin is dead.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star James Stewart in Consequence by George Sklar and Vladimir Posner. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Acts of Suspense, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Nowadays, weekends again call for entertaining, for friends and families enjoying themselves together. To the millions who regularly entertain with wine, and to those who haven't yet discovered this simple secret of inexpensive hospitality, here's a tip from famed hostess Elsa Maxwell. Successful parties can be inexpensive with Roma California wines. Yes, for just pennies a glass, about the cost of a soft drink, you can delight your guests with a taste-tempting selection of America's finest wines. Ruby red Roma port, nut-like Roma sherry, golden Roma muscatel, flame-bright Roma Tokay. These superb Roma wines are a perfect party treat with cake, fruit, nuts, or other tasty snacks. They're delightful anytime. Cut your entertaining costs. Start serving Roma wines tomorrow. Discover for yourself why Roma is America's first choice. Why only Roma wines, crushed from tender grapes grown in California's finest vineyards, bring you true wine luxury at such low price. You're right with Roma, bottled at the winery in California to bring you unvarying goodness always. That's R-O-M-A, Roma wines. Remember, more Americans enjoy Roma than any other wine.
And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage James Stewart who, as Dr. Philip Martin, in consequence, continues a narrative well calculated to keep you in suspense.
There must be something of the criminal in every man, because it seemed that I knew automatically everything I would have to do and how I was going to do it.
Hotel Wilton?
Dr. Wolf, please. Dr. Theodore Wolf.
Thank you. I'm sorry, sir. Dr. Wolf doesn't answer.
Oh, well, say, what's the number of his room again? I'd like to drop him a note.
Dr. Wolf is in 502.
502. Thank you. I knew in a big hotel like that, the chances of anyone remembering exactly what Ted looked like were pretty slim. And I figured that they'd give me the key all right, as long as I didn't stumble around asking for the number. I let myself in at 502 and I snapped on the light. I found the plane ticket on the bureau, and then I pried open his luggage and changed into one of his suits. I put on his hat and his overcoat, just in case. I packed my own things away. There were a pair of dark glasses on the bureau, too, and I put them on. Then I went down, checked out, paid cash. I knew he'd bought the plane ticket at the airport, so the travel clerk at the hotel, why, he wouldn't know Ted Wolf from Adam.
Yes, sir?
I'm Dr. Wolf. I've been staying at the hotel.
Oh, yes, Doctor.
I have a through plane ticket here to Ecuador, Pan American for tonight. I'd like to turn it in.
One moment, sir. Oh, that's Dr.
Dr. Theodore Wolf.
Thank you. Hello, Pan American Wilton Hotel. Say, I got a through ticket to Ecuador. Dr. Theodore Wolf, will you take it? All right. That'll be quite all right, Doctor.
Oh, and while you're at it, you might as well get me a couple of train tickets.
Yes, sir. Where to, sir?
What? Huh?
I said, where to, sir?
Oh, Los Angeles. We'd taken care of everything. A note to my bank, supposedly from Ted, enclosing Philip Martin's check for $5,000, and a letter in my own handwriting explaining that I'd agreed to lend him that amount, and asking the bank to forward the money to my account in Los Angeles. My account is Ted Wolf. And we drafted a letter to the people in Ecuador, and in Los Angeles, Joe became Mrs. Ted Wolf. First, everything clicked. I got the kind of a job a doctor would dream about, where I could write my own ticket and spend at least half my time entirely on research. And Joe started taking courses in a medical degree. Well, after all, she was only 24. And then, right here in broad daylight, in the hospital, it happened.
Hello.
Joe, pack the bag as quick as you can. Just enough for 2 or 3 days in the mountains. As fast as you can.
Bill.
It's Gwen. I saw her just now upstairs in the reception room.
Gwen, are you sure?
Absolutely sure.
Oh, no, couldn't it be a coincidence, Phil? I mean, couldn't Gwen maybe just have happened
to
be...
Maybe. Now listen, Joe. I've been thinking.
She mustn't know where we go.
That's just what I was thinking. Maybe it would be better if she did know where we were going.
If she did?
I don't know. Maybe just a coincidence. But if it is a showdown, the mountains would be a better place than here.
All right.
I'll phone the landlady.
Oh, Phil, is that safe?
Gwen won't talk, not until she's sure.
Carlton Apartments, Mrs. Burton.
Hello, Mrs. Burton. This is Dr. Wolf. I wonder if you'd do me a favor.
Oh, I'd be glad to, Dr. Wolf.
We're going out of town for a couple of days, and I just remembered that some friends said they might stop by. We thought they might like to join us, so I wanted them to know where we were.
All right.
Maybe you could just stick a note on our door where they could see it. We're going to Caribou Lake, and we'll be in the cottage at the very top of the mountain. It's straight up a dirt road from the lake. They can't miss it.
Caribou Lake, the cottage at the top of the mountain, up the dirt road from the lake. Uh-huh. Is that all?
Yes, thank you, Miss Burton. That's all. Caribou Lake is no nothing much more than just a general store where you can buy fake and hire boats and cottages. And that time of year, there's hardly anybody there except the people who run the store. And our cottage was a good 3 miles away up a twisting dirt road running above the lake, but you could see it good and plain even at night when the lights were on. We stopped at the store and both went in to buy the things we needed, you know, food and kerosene, matches, and stuff like that. Then we went on up the mountain. By that time, it was almost dark, and Joe fixed something for us to eat. Neither one of us could touch it. We were watching the road for lights of a car. It was about 8:30 when we saw them. They went right past the store without stopping, and they came on up the mountain. They couldn't have been anyone else but Gwen.
Well?
Well, she didn't waste any time.
Phil, what if the car is rented?
Oh, she'd bring her own. She loves to drive.
Phil, you're not afraid, are you?
No. Not anymore. I'll go.
Well, this is a surprise.
Hello, Gwen.
Dr. Martin. Always poised. Nothing surprises you, does it?
I suppose it was the check.
Partly. And then I happened to notice that a Dr. Theodore Wolfe had married a Miss Josephine Reynolds in Los Angeles. And it did occur to me that your idealistic friend must have been an awfully fast worker. Well, aren't you and your bride going to ask me in?
Come in, Mrs. Martin.
Thank you. Quite cozy, aren't you?
We have been.
Well, I'm sorry to break up your little idea.
Cut it out, Gwen. What do you want?
Why, my dear man, what do you think I want?
The way things are now, you've got $200,000 worth of life insurance coming to you. Why don't you let us alone?
Philip, I don't know whether you realize how much worry and anguish you've caused me.
Sure, I know. I know just exactly how much.
Then perhaps you also know exactly how you stand with the law in this matter. I don't know about all this impersonation business, except that it would permanently ruin your career. But I do know that the laws covering bigamy are quite drastic.
I used to think that money meant everything to you, Gwen. I guess it doesn't.
I don't feel called upon to accept rebukes from you, Philip, for anything. Not after what you've done. I feel that I'm being most generous to both of you.
What is it exactly you want, Gwen?
Either you come back and we'll explain the whole thing as amnesia or something, or you'll both go to jail.
How could you?
You shut up.
Listen. Does anybody else know about this?
Of course not.
Nobody knows you came out here, or why.
After all, Philip, I do have some pride left. I just said I was taking a little trip to New York to forget.
All right, all right. Now just give us a couple of minutes to talk things over, will you? Alone.
Very well. Although I don't see that there's very much to talk about.
Will you go outside, or shall we?
I'll go. I'll wait in the car.
Oh, Phil.
It's all right, Joe. I don't mind now.
Neither do I.
Do you think you can do it?
Me?
Yes, I'll have to have an alibi.
Have you thought about how...
Yeah, yeah, all day, I guess. But it's all right, it's good. She'll disappear the same way I did.
Fire?
Yeah, yeah. Only I'll have to be down at the store when it happens. This place will go up like kindling. And when they pull her out, they'll think it's you. Nobody knows she's here. And I'll be there to say it is you.
How are you going to...
I got that all fixed. It's down in the cellar. All you have to do is... Here. Use this hatchet. Can you?
Yes. I will.
And then go out to the car and get on the floor in the back seat under a blanket, lock it from the inside. I can probably get away right afterwards.
All right, Phil.
I'll see you in the car. The whole thing shouldn't take more than a couple of hours.
Phil, you're not afraid.
Are you?
No. I'm glad.
Gwen?
Yes?
Come on in.
Well, have you decided?
Yes. You might as well eat with us. There'll be a few details to talk over.
I'm not sure I feel much like eating in this house, Philip.
Well, I'm not going to start back hungry. Give me the keys to your car, will you? It's blocking mine. I've got to go down to the store and get something for dinner.
Really, Philip?
Oh, stop griping. You've won. Give me the keys.
Very well. But I wouldn't try any mad dashes if I were you.
Oh, don't be a fool, Glenn.
No, I don't suppose you would. Alone.
She went in. I took the keys. First, I went around back and down cellar. I put a lot of old newspapers around the wood pile and doused the whole thing with kerosene. Then I cut a stub of a plumber's candle and set it on the papers and lit it. I knew just about how long it would take the candle to burn down, about 45 minutes, something like that. And then I went out and got in Gwen's car and started down the mountain without lights. At the drop above the lake, I put it in low, crammed on the wheels, and jumped out. It bounced once and then went over where there's about 40 feet of water. Unless somebody told them where to look, they'd never find it. All that had taken about 15 minutes. The walk down to the store took about 20 more.
Well, forget something, Dr. Wolf?
Yep. Yeah, like a fool tobacco. I can't get through the night without a pipe.
Know just how it is. You walk now?
Yep. Yeah, working up an appetite.
Here you are. You folks have callers tonight?
No. Oh, why? Oh, why?
Thought I saw a car go up your way a while back.
Oh, I saw the lights. They didn't come up. Somebody must have made the wrong turn. Didn't they come back?
I don't know. I was out back for a spell. Do you see that car come back by, Daisy?
You must have seen it, all right, about an hour ago.
Seems like I did hear a car about there.
Sure, that was it.
Yep, pretty sure I did.
She duly don't always see so good, but she hears plenty. Am I?
Look at here, Ed. Look at up there.
Huh?
Looks like a fire.
Hey, why, it is a fire. Why, golly, Doc, that looks like your place.
Oh, it couldn't be, but it must be.
Big, too. Well, we better get up there, Doc.
What, do you have your car?
We'll go in the truck. It's right outside. The boys can bring Ma along in the car. See that, Ma?
Yep. Lenny, Johnny, get out the car.
All right, come on, Doc. Oh, I sure hope everything's all right.
Yeah, so do I. The cottage was all wood and dry, and it was completely gone by the time we got there. It was the boys who dragged her out of the embers.
I wouldn't look if I was you, Doctor.
Oh, Joe.
It must have been quick anyway. She's burnt almost to nothing.
Hey, Ma, you better go on, Doc. We'll take care of everything.
All right.
Want one of the boys to go with you?
No, I'll get in touch with you from town. I'll make the arrangements down there and send down for the...
Yes, well, you just go on. We'll see to everything.
All right.
I'm awful sorry, Dr. Wolf.
I climbed into the car and started down the mountain. When I was around the first bend, I reached over with one hand and touched the blanket on the floor behind me. Are you all right?
Yes, Philip. I'm quite all right.
Gwen. Gwen has never told me how it happened. But of course she killed her. We both killed her. I know that I'm trapped. I'm hopelessly, irrevocably trapped by the terrible burden of guilt we share between us, as she is. I know now that two people held together by such a frightful bond cannot both go on living, for that bond can be broken in only one way. One of the two must die. And so I write this only to have the true facts brought to light in the event of such a death. For no matter how innocent it may appear, no matter how natural the cause, no matter how plausible the accident, it will be no accident. It will be murder. Cold-blooded, calculated, deliberate murder.
now the local news. Dr. Philip Martin, who has been in ill health for the past 3 months while recovering from an attack of amnesia, died today in his home from an overdose of sleeping sedative. He is survived by his widow, Mrs. Gwendolyn Martin.
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Before we hear again from James Stewart, the star of Consequence, tonight's suspense play, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Here's a suggestion that will make tomorrow night's fish dinner a meal to remember. Delight your family by serving delicious pale gold Roma California Sauterne. The delightful bouquet and delicate, tempting taste of Roma Sauterne bring out the flavor fullness, the real appetizing goodness of fish or fowl, lend an air of friendly companionship to the meal. And best of all, you can enjoy Roma Sauterne often. It costs so little, actually only pennies a glass. Join the millions who have made Roma America's first choice. The reason? Roma gives you true wine taste luxury at low price. Make Roma Sauterne with seafood a regular Friday night custom. Get several bottles of delicious, inexpensive Roma Sauterne tomorrow. Insist on Roma, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is Jimmy Stewart again. Suspense is a radio show that got started just about the time I first found myself overseas. And with everybody, it has always been one of the two or three top favorites. I've been looking forward for a long time to my appearance with the show tonight. And next Thursday, a very swell actor, Richard Green, will be your star in his first broadcast since he joined the British Army 4.5 years ago.
Next Thursday, same time, Roma Wines will bring you Mr. Richard Green as star of Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills.
Produced by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Another great episode from the golden age of radio. You just heard the episode Consequence from the series Suspense, one of the great series of American old-time radio. That episode first aired the evening of Thursday, February 21st, 1946, on the CBS Radio Network and starred Jimmy Stewart. That episode is going out to Prince George's resident Maurice, who requested I play a Suspense episode with Stewart in. I'm afraid our time together is drawing to a close. I hope you enjoyed the show, and invite you to tune in again next week for more great radio classics. Also, please be sure to let your local radio station know you enjoy this program. If you'd like to send me feedback or requests, please email me at Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at CFISFM.com. If you prefer to write to me, you may do so as well. My mailing address is Old Parlor Radio, 2880 15th Avenue, Prince George, B.C., Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFIS studios in Prince George, B.C., I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week. ¶¶